Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 321, recorded on February 5th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and this show is sponsored by HelloFresh, the leading meal delivery kit service. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the code TIOSS35 when you subscribe. And with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
Yep. Doing well.
Cool. All right. So, Apple.
So that's 6 weeks show.
See you later.
Bye.
So, Apple did well in Q4 2016, the holiday quarter. They, for a while, have been in second place, second fiddle to Samsung in terms of smartphone sales, but they outpaced them by about 800,000 units in the fourth quarter, which is not super surprising given what happened with Samsung's phones.
Right. Considering Apple had new phones and Samsung didn't.
Yeah, Apple had a new phone and Samsung had
new phones
and exploded.
Also, Apple didn't have to worry about their phones exploding.
Right, yeah. So,
yeah.
It was millions of units. Let's see. They had a really good. It grew by quite a bit in 2006 too. And I mean, the fact that the smartphone market is still growing is kind of boggling to me. That people are, you know, still buying phones over and over again.
Well, it's not.
Well, there's major parts of, or you know, major groups of people that have not been exposed to cell phone smartphones yet. So there's this whole untapped market, and that's where a lot of this growth is coming from.
I suppose that's true. Yeah, yeah. So the global smartphone shipments grew 3% annually, a record of 1.5 billion units in 2016. That's insane. That is nuts.
That's a lot of phones.
Yeah. And Apple Watch sales. Apple Watch is doing really well. So I don't understand why everybody is so down on the Apple Watch. Maybe it's because I'm reading
because
Matt
they're wrong
comments. But
yeah, they're wrong.
I mean, Renee Ritchie over at iMore wrote a nice piece. Said just like it's time to stop saying the Apple Watch is a failure, because it's not.
It's not at all. Yeah. So they set an all-time revenue record in Q1 of 2017. All-time revenue record. And it is the most popular smartwatch, period. So they sold, according to Strategy Analytics, Apple sold 5.2 million Apple Watches in the holiday quarter. Versus, what is it? Samsung is at 1.3? I'm sorry, that's 2015. Yep. So 11.6. What am I looking at?
You don't know what you're looking at. 5.2 million. I mean, the point is, it was 5.2 million in a quarter when the whole smartwatch segment was estimated at, like, I think 8.5 million shipments, meaning that Apple has, like, 63% market share.
Yeah, yeah,
and this is based on other people figuring out what Apple's selling. So it's possible Apple has sold even more Apple Watches.
Yeah, they're guesstimating because we don't have actual numbers.
True. Yeah,
from Apple.
I mean, so the strategy has done this for many, many years, and so it's more of like a relative measurement. It's relative to how they measure everything else. So we're not entirely sure what the true numbers are, but it's you get a pretty good idea of what's going on. And the idea is Apple Watch is kicking butt. And I see it all. Yeah. I see them everywhere. I don't know about you
thing.
Guys, like, but I, you know, whenever I see someone wearing a watch, for whatever reason, my eyes are now trained to people's wrists. And I'm always checking out what people are wearing. And a lot of time it's, if it's a smartwatch, more times than not, it's an Apple Watch.
Right. And if it's not, it's a Fitbit or a Garmin.
Yes, it's the Fitbit. Yep. That's the one that I see also. I see tons of Apple Watch everywhere. And if it's not an Apple Watch and it's a smartwatch, it's Fitbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of Fitbit. I'm very surprised at how popular Fitbit is, but
I see the Samsungs every once in a while. I think it's the Samsung, which is the kind of squarish one.
That's the Apple Watch.
Samsung have a square and it's the square one. No,
I think
like
the square
rectangle
one.
I'm pretty sure
that might be Samsung.
Okay,
I have to look up the Fitbit one to make sure that's what I'm really seeing.
And there's also the fact that everybody says people who don't like the shape of the Apple Watch because it's rectangular and not round. That's never really bothered me. And I mean, if you have a round,
oh, no, it's not the Samsung. That
if
I'm
you have
seeing
a round watch, then Fitbit you're place, cropping a lot
I'm
of
seeing
the screen. Fitbit.
Yeah,
and it's
I see
and
those.
It's a square watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Apple Watch did well. Tim Cook said they could barely keep up with demand. So, good on you, Apple Watch, doing well. So, as far as new features, we've been talking about theater mode in watchOS 3.2.
I tested that the other day.
Yeah. Did it work?
Yes, it worked. And the one thing that I wish it did was that when I enable theater mode on my watch, it should automatically mute my iPhone.
Hmm. So interesting. I mean, typically your notifications and your buzzes and stuff go to the watch from your phone, right? So your phone won't make any noise as long as those notifications are forwarded to your watch.
But if you have stuff that's not forwarding,
yeah,
your phone can still ding at you.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah, so I should be able to tap the comedy tragedy masks and my phone should mute. You know, it's the same thing. Like I go into airplane mode and I should be able to, it just works. You put one device in airplane mode and they both go into airplane mode.
That makes a lot of sense, especially since the iPhone 7 has the raise to wake thing. It's very similar to the watch now in that respect. And you know, we do have the synchronization between like you said, airplane mode, do not disturb, those sorts of things. It's very likely that because this is a beta, we may see that sort of thing appear.
I hope they do.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Because as soon as I did it in the theater, I'm like, actually, this is like a no-brainer feature.
Yeah. Yeah.
It should just happen.
For those who don't know, theater mode, it's more or less just for the watch, and it keeps your watch from the screen from turning on when you raise your wrist, and it also mutes all sounds. Now, can you, if you turn on theater mode, can you turn off the sound mute thingy? I mean, I guess the question
yes,
is...
Yes, you can.
Okay, so you can keep it in theater
it's
mode.
It's doing its own mute.
Oh, these are separate mute things?
Yeah. So if your watch is not
saying
normally
it
muted...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah.
There we go.
I just always leave mine on mute. I don't know if I'd change that behavior or not. The other thing I would love to see with the theater mode is just it being the option to have it GPS enabled, like location aware.
That would be cool. Or have it tie into like the Fandango app. So
right. It
knows that you've bought tickets and 5 minutes before the movie's supposed to start, your watch automatically goes into theater mode. 5 minutes after the movie's supposed to end, it goes out of theater mode.
Yeah.
That's some...
Okay, I want this.
That's like next level Siri stuff.
Well, yeah, that's like that's the AI stuff that Apple needs to get to. I mean, this is where we need to get to, where you don't even have to think about this stuff. Because, I mean, it's nice that it's there, but let's be honest, how many people are going to totally forget to even bother with it?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll remember because I love playing with stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, right. So will I. But, I mean, a lot of people are going to not even be, one, aware the feature's even there, and then, two, won't even bother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that if you know the feature exists, the first time you accidentally trigger the raise to wake thing in the theater, you'll say, oh, yeah, and then you'll enable it.
Again, if you care.
If you care.
The problem is, I go to the theater, and mostly it's, you know, like, the 11 p.m. showing for an R-rated movie, and people got their five-year-old there with them.
Oh, so you're saying
that's people, so inappropriate.
People don't care about their phones lighting up in that scenario?
Yeah. I'm saying, yes, this is what I'm implying, that people really don't give a crap.
No, they don't. No.
This is America. People can raise their children however they want.
That's why I also go to always what I call the heathen showings.
What's that?
What's a heathen showing? Because I'm suddenly really interested.
You go to your favorite movie at like 9 or 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning when you should be in church.
Oh. I like that.
I'm totally up for that. You know what? I'm going to start doing heathen viewings. I love this.
Theaters are usually very empty.
And it's cheap. That's a good tip. All right. So Apple quietly updated the firmware on the AirPods. So they moved from...
Do they look less dorky in your ears?
They don't look dorky. They moved from...
By the way, Adam, the photo you posted...
On Instagram?
Oh, I love that photo.
That's gotten the most likes of any photo I think I've ever posted on Instagram.
I think I want to take that photo and use it as your contact photo. So when you call me, that's what I see on my phone.
Ooh, good idea. I'm doing that too. I like that. Yeah. So the firmware moved from version 3.3.1 to 3.5.1. Just magically, you wouldn't even know it happened unless you are crazy and you pay attention to that.
Unless
stuff.
It did.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't know what happened or didn't happen. So you have to go, I believe, general. So settings, general, about, scroll down. And
on the device where the AirPods are currently paired and connected. They have to be paired and connected.
Oh.
And
right.
So not just any of the devices they've paired with, when they're currently connected to.
Correct. Yeah. And they have to be like on. Okay. So if you have them in the, like I have them paired with my iPhone right now. The case is closed, which means they're not connected.
Right, you have to open the case to check it.
The AirPod thing will not show up in about until they're actually connected. And then you can see AirPods just in the list.
Yeah.
And then you can tap on AirPods, and then you can look at what firmware version is currently running.
Yeah. So as far as changes, we have no idea. We have no idea what Apple has changed, and you know, there's speculation that...
They changed the number.
They changed the number. Look, your AirPods are better because the number is different.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I'll buy that.
And it went up like 2 point.
By two.
Or is it 1 point? I got to do my math.
Point
it
two.
Went from 3.3.1 to
3.5.1. So it's 0.2.
0.2.
Yeah.
Went up. That's a lot. That's a lot of points.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of, yeah. yeah, so of course there have been issues with some people having disconnect and reconnecting during phone calls has been the
dropouts,
the biggest complaint. I haven't experienced that on phone calls. I've experienced it with being connected to my Mac. My Mac has never been good at holding a Bluetooth connection. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but the Mac Bluetooth connection has always been a little wonky for whatever reason.
I have a closed lid mode.
What's that?
That's when you have your laptop with the lid closed and you're using an external display all the time?
No, I don't waste displays like that.
Okay. Let's see. So your Bluetooth also is connected to USB. So... here's something else you could try. Unplug all your USB stuff and see if your Bluetooth connection improves. And if it does, then you experiment with, actually, you can look online and figure out which of your USB ports is linked to Bluetooth and try connecting stuff to the other Bluetooth ports.
Interesting. I, for what it's worth, I've noticed it happening at home and out and about. So regardless of if some USB thing is connected.
Here's the reality that people need to understand. Bluetooth is just one of those, actually all wireless signals are just highly susceptible to like weird interference.
Yeah.
It's just like, it happens.
Yeah, which is why if you're like microwaving food and watching some kind of thing on your iPad with AirPods in and your iPad is right next to the microwave, the video is probably going to stop.
Or a house like mobile phone, you know, not, I mean like a phone that's running on wireless phone, right?
Sure. One of those things that people don't have.
And it rings or a signal comes in or some other weird thing happens or a solar flare or who knows?
Yeah, the microwave.
I've just had a lot of people complain about dropouts with the AirPods, and I'll like investigate. I'll say, well, what happened? How long? Oh, I was listening to music and they cut out for a second and then they picked right back up. It's like, how frequently? Once a week. Okay.
Huh.
You don't have a problem. They're working just fine.
Yeah, maybe once a week isn't a problem. I've definitely experienced it where music will or sound will cut out in and out a bunch of times. But that, again, I think was more on my Mac than anything else.
But I mean, just what I'm saying is like they're not defective. For me, I've had dropouts occasionally here and there. Most frequently when it's low battery, I've noticed I tend to get more kind of little cutouts. And so I don't know if that's just a power management thing or what's going on usually, because I'll hear the little, you know, little beep noise telling you, hey, they're getting low on battery. You know, you're at 20%. And then I think you get a beep at 20% and then at 10%. And usually when it's down that low, that's when I've had dropouts. But again, it's only for like, I'll lose music connection for like a second and then it'll just like pick back up. And I just know any other Bluetooth headphones that I've ever used, I get those all the time. And with the AirPods, it's like maybe that happens once a week or once every couple of weeks. Like they're so much better and more rock solid, at least for me, in my experience. I haven't had anybody come and say, no, they're just disconnecting all the time. I can't get them to pair. I haven't heard people with massive issues. I'm sure there's exceptions, you know, and if you are experiencing that, my advice would be take them back. You could have just gotten a bum pair. I mean, they are a new technology. It's a new product. So the fact that there might just be some units that, you know, didn't pass the muster is,
yeah,
that happens.
Yeah, sure. So I just like, this is the first pair of wireless headphones that I've had where the manufacturer has actually updated the firmware. So good on you, Apple. You're doing something. And hopefully, I'm hoping to hear from people who have had dropouts. I know there were a couple people talking to me on Twitter saying they had dropouts and were dealing with you know, engineering at Apple, that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe it's fixed.
Hopefully it's fixed. Let me know. Let us know either over tweets or emails or whatever. Looking forward to that. And with that, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks that are just short on time. They source the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. They employ a full-time registered dietitian on staff who reviews each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced. And all of this is delivered right to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. All of the ingredients are separated by recipe in a fancy little box in order to make your life super simple. They offer both classic boxes and veggie boxes, which you can choose each week. There are options for 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week, and they can be designed for either 2 or 4 people. So my experience with HelloFresh, first, I noticed the awesome packaging they have. Everything is organized, and the recipes are in neat, well-designed booklets, and which is great because I loved how much the recipes actually taught me about cooking, and I'll be using those recipes again in the future. So it's all nice and organized in those booklets. It includes nearly everything you need to cook the food. And of course, they tasted great. And one of my favorite things was that there was actually more than enough to keep me satisfied. And best of all, I didn't have to worry about finding the ingredients or making sure I had a recipe that would work. It was all taken care of and delivered right to my door. So some of the stuff that they have in the classic boxes this week are the Spanish one-pan chicken with chorizo and bell peppers, which looks and sounds really good. Zucchini flatbreads with balsamic onions, olives, and walnuts. And the cranberry turkey burgers with green salad. They actually have quite a bit more, and you can choose the meals ahead of time that they send to you, which is pretty great. So if you want to try HelloFresh, check them out at HelloFresh.com, and you can get $35 off your first week of deliveries by using the code TIOSS35 when you subscribe. That's TIOSS35. Check them out at HelloFresh.com. We thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay, now with that, Apple removed the activation lock checker tool. And I guess it's kind of a bummer. So for those who don't know, Apple put up this web page where you could check to see if a device was under activation lock. So if you were trying to buy something from eBay or Craigslist, something like that, and you wanted to make sure you weren't getting duped into getting some kind of stolen / locked phone, you could type in the IMEI or the serial number, and it would say yes, it's locked, or no, it's not locked, and it was good times. However, they removed it kind of inexplicably just a couple days ago. And
right, although now we kind of have a plausible explanation.
Plausible explanation, yeah. So this is from Mac Rumors. They pointed out that there is an activation lock bypass process, which is pretty damn involved. But so the idea is you pull apart whatever device, you desolder the memory chip, you then place it into some kind of device that lets you directly read it in your computer, and then you are able to change the serial number of the device this way. And yep, the way that they
basically
do it,
flash it, right?
Yeah, so it's a flashing, and
like an EEPROM or something like they used to do back in the day.
Oh, good times.
The point is, you know, this thing stores the serial number, and the activation lock is tied to the serial number. So if you can change it to a serial number that is not locked, then right, you'll be good. So they
and
just
you
go
use
through
Apple's tool as a checker.
Right. So you just randomly change like S's to fives, or, you know, zeros to O's or something like that. And, you know, so you make different versions of the serial number, throw it into the activation lock tool, and once you get a combination that says it's not locked, then you say, cool, I'm going to flash that one to the chip. You do it, you solder it back into the device, and it works. Now, you need special hardware to
make a
do
ton
this
of money on eBay off stolen phones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you would. You definitely would. So I imagine Apple had kind of a dilemma on their hands, because on one side, you know, you want to provide the service. It's a great service to people. But at the same time, this enables these people to do this. So, I mean, I hope they're working on another way to provide an activation lock status tool. But it seemed like they just had to pull it to reassess.
Yeah.
Seems like they could provide some sort of tool that lets you just push the information to a seller, maybe, in some verified way. If that makes any sense. So I'm the seller of the phone, and I can send some sort of, I can opt to send a report to a buyer.
Oh, yeah.
That would just validate it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. From the phone.
You know, and then they could prevent how many times you can send, they could rate limit how many times you could send that or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and as somebody pointed out too, I mean, even if this is the case, why weren't they rate limiting the number of times you could like put in serial numbers if somebody was just trying to like probe serial numbers?
Well, and they may have been rate limiting.
I think they were. They even had a CAPTCHA on it on that page.
Yeah.
Now the other side of this coin is the suspicion is this is why we were talking about devices, brand new devices being activation locked when you purchase them from Apple or wherever. We were talking about this.
Someone that already figured out the serial number.
Yeah. So someone had guessed a serial number of a device that hadn't been activated yet because it was very likely either hadn't been created or, you know, was sitting on a shelf, that sort of thing. And so you basically have two devices out there with the same serial number and one was already activated illegitimately. So that's another issue. So I understand it. I hope Apple gives us a way to verify.
F you criminals. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
For
sure. Last but not least, unless you guys have anything else, iOS 10.3 beta now provides a little message when you open a 32-bit app saying that not only does the app need to be updated, which we see right now in the current OS, but it also says that the app will not work with future versions of iOS. The developer needs to update the app.
Boo. So,
I understand what Apple's trying to do, but at the same time, there are some apps that are just like, they work just fine. I just want to use it. And there's not a, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not a huge benefit to 64-bit on these devices still, probably for a long time into the future. Although it seems like Apple is trying to move to full 64-bit devices. I would guess the iPhone 8 is probably going to be a 64-bit only device.
All right, so if that's what they're doing, if they're doing 64-bit only, meaning no 32-bit apps can actually run, then pushing developers into updating their apps now is a good thing. But yeah, I'm with you, Michael. I don't know if there's any seriously noticeable benefit in 64 versus 32-bit on an iPhone.
Well, you know, I'm with Michael. I get why Apple would want to do this. They're trying to like make sure that you don't, you know, and they did this other thing where they were cracking down on abandoned apps and apps that weren't getting updates and stuff like that. And this feels like this is part of that.
Yeah.
But here's the problem is that there are a lot of these old apps out there that still continue to work and run just fine. But there's really no financial incentive for a developer to go back and like update those apps. Like they're not going to go back and like, you know, redo builds or something like that just to kind of comply with Apple's thing, because they're not getting any money for, you know, I have a lot of apps that were apps and games and stuff from like the original iPhone that I still have. I'm thinking of like Ramp Champ or, my kids have this little one that's, I forget what it's called. It's got like these blowfish and you tap on the screen and you try and fill up the screen with these fish. That's an old app, you know, old
what
game.
What was that skee ball game?
Was that Ramp Champ?
Yeah.
I loved that.
And like Icon Factory is not going to go back and like rebuild that for 64-bit.
Well,
it's still a great game though.
It makes more sense that Apple would enforce the 64-bit on new submissions.
And they've been doing that. I mean, you haven't been able since like 2015, you have not been able to submit an app that isn't 64-bit. You could still build it as 64-bit with 32-bit support, which is why you still have apps that support older devices, even though they're allowed to be on the App Store and you can get updates. But yeah, you can't push an update or a new app into the App Store that doesn't support 64-bit at this point. And Apple's been doing that since June of 2015.
I'm guessing that this has a lot to do with, so they want to move to a fully 64-bit operating system. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that means you need to, if you're running 32-bit and 64-bit applications on the same platform, you need both versions of those libraries and APIs in the device. That means you effectively could be looking at doubling the memory overhead and doubling the storage required for these things. And you have
to
maintain these.
Still handles that kind of stuff, right?
Sorry?
Maybe I'm wrong. Doesn't app thinning kind of take care of that sort of stuff? So if you have, say I have an original iPad mini, like iPad mini 1.
Yes, but if I'm saying if you have
only 32-bit.
If you have a 64-bit device, that means you still need 32-bit and 64-bit libraries on the device so that you can support the 32-bit only devices.
But again, even if they push this forward, what I'm saying is they're not going to be able to force developers to only do a 64-bit build of their app, because you're going to, what if a developer still wants to support an iPad mini 1 or an iPhone, 4 or iPhone 5 for that matter.
Very true. Yeah. It's a little sideways.
64-bit chips are in iPhone 5S and newer, the iPad Airs and newer, and iPad Mini 2 and newer, and 6th-generation iPod Touch. So, if they move to, force developers to only put out 64-bit builds of apps, that means you've got all these old devices that just become...
stop working.
So you're talking about...
Their apps stop working. Like, apps that they already have that they're currently using... don't run anymore. I get it with an OS, so you can't upgrade to and a lot of those devices you haven't been able to put the latest OS on for a while, right? But I don't know. It seems like they're going to get accused, like they often do, of trying to force people to buy new devices, like using this as the stick to make people buy new devices.
Yeah.
Which may be absolutely true. I mean, they may be fed up with people who are still rocking their first gen iPad mini.
Well, those people,
iPad fourth generation.
It's there's a lot going on here. I'm going to need to do some more research into what's being forced. Are these apps that are old, like RAMChamp? Is RAMChamp going to be just purged from the App Store?
Yeah, I think so. Possibly, yeah.
Well, okay, so you have two situations going on. One, you have, Apple keeps old versions of apps, right? So if you have your iPad mini, your old iPad mini, or original iPod Touch, something like that, and you're still rocking that, you're using it as a remote for iTunes or something like that, you can go into
download and back up your IPA files. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, right now, you can go into iTunes and... you click download for the remote app or something like that. You can go into purchase, what have you. So if an app if the app was supported on that operating system and on that device, Apple...
and the developer has chosen to leave it up.
So that's an option left to developers? Yeah. If they decided to leave it up, then it'll download whatever the latest version works with your device. But are they going to stop allowing that? That's the big question. Yeah.
This certainly feels like a precursor to getting to that point, especially, again, given what they've been doing with the last, latest purges of just abandonware and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, they've been only going after certain apps, and no one knows why they go after some apps and not others. Again, RAMChamp is not to beat up on it, but it's a great example of an app that's just been sitting there for forever.
Yeah.
It hasn't been updated in, probably 5 years. I don't know. But it was allowed to stay, yet, last month they went through and there were other apps that developers weren't updating that Apple just purged out. And I think it had to do with how many devices it was ever installed on, what the installed base was. So, if your app was never downloaded and then you haven't updated since you released it, it was probably purged out of the store.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
For right or wrong.
The, you know, RampChamp, you can't find it. So the ones that are, I guess...
No, again, you'd already have to have it installed. And I don't even know if you can... I assume you can re-download it.
So what's the story with these kinds of...
purchased.
You can. It looks like you can anyway. In purchased, it shows up in that list. But
right. It's not going to show up in the App Store, though.
What is the story with these sorts of apps? Is it...
So that's the developer...
The developer deleted it?
Yeah.
Or Apple
said
no?
No, like... Yeah, I think the developer can like pull it off of sale from the App Store, but choose to leave it up for existing customers. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that they can re-download it, or they can turn that off completely and just remove it from the store completely. So I'm pretty sure what I've been told is through iTunes Connect, the developer sort of has that choice. Mm. They can decide which builds and versions to leave up and whether or not those builds or versions are available for sale or purchase on the App Store. But I think there are also rules. So probably with something like RampChamp, it probably doesn't qualify for the rules, the current rules, for to even be for sale.
Okay. So you think Icon Factory said, we're not supporting this anymore. We're going to take it off the store because we don't want people buying it.
Right.
They unlisted it. Yeah.
And so it's just gone. And so if you didn't save the app file out of iTunes... You just don't have access to it at all.
No, you can still get RampChamp. I mean, RampChamp is one of those.
My thing was, if you had ever purchased it, they chose to leave it up.
I misunderstood.
I haven't tested it.
I thought you said took it.
No, so they took it off of sale. But so there's two things the developer can do. They can pull the app down from sale, and choose to leave up all the existing versions and downloads like on Apple's servers so that existing customers who purchased it can still re-download it because it's in your purchase library, right? It's in the purchase library of thousands of customers. Or they can choose, we're just pulling it off the store completely. And some people have been hit by this. And this is, and I only know this because I've received emails from people like, hey, I had this app and I deleted it off my device and I went to re-download it. It's not in the App Store and it's not, you know, it's not showing up in my, or it's in my purchase history, but I can't re-download it. It says it's not available. And that's the scenario where the developer has literally, they pulled the binaries completely out of iTunes Connect for whatever reason. And if you call up Apple in that scenario, Apple support, they're going to say, well, we have always advised for any iTunes purchase, and this goes for movies, TV shows, apps, whatever, that you make backups of the files.
Which is cool until you realize you can't do that now. Current versions of iTunes don't let you do that anymore.
Which is why, crazy as I am, years ago, so I use ChronoSync. And mm-hmm. I have my Drobo, and I set up a ChronoSync on my mobile applications folder, and I set it so that it only it syncs any new files, and it never deletes any old files from the synchronized backup.
That's clever.
So if I go in, I have like every version, the IPA file of every version of every app that I've ever bought or purchased through iTunes.
That's
like, it's
insane.
Crazy. I think I probably still have a copy. What was that one that would allow you to use like your mobile hotspot? It was like,
oh,
you
still
know,
have
fake
that
app.
One? I
you
think
remember
I
what
still
I'm talking
have.
About? It was like the app and you went into the secret area.
Yeah.
And then you
yeah, it was like a calculator thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I still have a copy of that app.
Yeah, I think I have that one too. That's pretty fun.
But I mean, I have like every version and it saved me a couple times. You know, so, and I've even, I'll just say, helped some people out when they've emailed me and said, oh, I'm in this situation. Apple pulled the app or the developer pulled the app. I don't have a copy of it.
Yeah, but they're DRM'd to your account.
No, they're not DRM'd.
Yes, they are. They have to be.
I think they have a record that says this is purchased by this person, but I don't. Pretty sure the IPA files aren't DRM'd.
They are. But it's possible they can re-encrypt or work with somebody else. But I always thought they were DRM'd to your particular account. I may be wrong.
I thought it just had a record in the info. Like it, there's a line in the info that says this is, and it has my email address. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. All right. So
a long time ago, I sent one to somebody and they supposedly got it reinstalled. So
cool. All right. Let's wrap it up here. So, Jeff, do you have a pick this week?
Of course I have a pick. And my pick is Linea, the new drawing program. I've been playing with it for a little while now, and it's pretty fracking awesome. So, it's an iPad drawing app, has Apple Pencil support, gives you multiple layers that you can draw on. You can set the opacity of each layer independently. You can put grids on your pages. It has five different drawing tools, so it's like pen, pencil, markers, that sort of stuff. And the color palette, they did this really cool thing with it. So when you tap on a color in the palette, and it's like this big long strip, you get this pop out that shows the color and shades of the color, you know, going lighter and darker. So you have a lot more control over the colors that you're picking, and you can make custom colors, and it'll automatically build the shades off your custom colors. And it's pretty awesome. There's a couple things that I'm seeing as issues, but issues that I think they can address with updates. And one is that pressure with the Apple Pencil doesn't seem to always register the way you think it should. So sometimes when I'm drawing very lightly, my line is much darker than I expect, and I don't know if that's a pressure thing, if it's the angle of the Apple Pencil or what, but that strikes me as a version 1.0 issue, and they'll probably have an update out to fix that very quickly. But it's easy to export. You can even export as a Photoshop document if you want, and it's, holy crap, it's a really great drawing app.
I like the flexible exporting feature too. That seems cool to me. I've wanted that in other apps where you can select an area and just export that area of a larger.
Yes, like, it's really nice.
The only other thing that I read, Jeff, I haven't tried the app yet. I've been reading the reviews. I've read that with Apple Pencil too, it doesn't unfortunately currently support like the side shading thing, like where you can use the edge of the pencil.
Yeah, and that may be playing into the pressure issue that I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
So, but yes, you're right. It doesn't, from what I gather, really notice the angle of the stylus. But I'm assuming that's the sort of thing that they can address with a minor software update.
Yeah.
Cool.
So anyhow, it's a very cool app.
Linea. Yeah,
speaking of Icon Factory.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, speaking of Icon Factory. And it's what? $10, I think.
$10.
Yep.
Very cool. All right. Adam, what's your pick?
My pick is a new game, puzzle style game called Splitter Critters. And it's one of these unique games that, well, one, the graphics are just really cool. The idea is you have these little aliens and they're on these little worlds, these little alien creatures, and they're sort of bouncing back and forth, and there are various puzzles, and you're trying to get them from one point on the screen to their spaceship, which is on another point of the screen. And the way you do it is you basically draw a line and sort of rip the screen in half wherever your line is drawn, and then you can move one side or the other up or down or left or right or however it might be to try and get them in the right position to get around obstacles, to go over things, to avoid things that might kill them. And you get for each level sort of a limited number of kind of splits or cuts. And it sounds really basic and simple, And it sort of starts out that way. But then, of course, like all these games do, it progressively gets harder and harder and more challenging. And then you also, as you're using lines, and another interesting mechanic, it took me a little while to understand, so I'll let people know this, because this is kind of a, if you get the game, it'll be a helpful tip. So you can, like I said, you have a limited number of sort of cuts, but you can undo the last cut or any of the cuts that you've done, and then reuse them, sort of get them back. So they kind of work like a little inventory. So where that comes into play is you might split an area and then move your critters to a different place, and then maybe need to undo that to get to other areas or other regions, or to get your sort of splits back. And I don't think that's giving, hopefully that's not a spoiler, but overall, really fun game. I want to say it was $1.99, or I can't remember what I paid for it.
What's it called?
At this point. Called Splitter Critters.
Cool.
I'll try and find you a link for the show notes. $2.99, there you go.
Cool.
Well worth it.
$2.99. All right. So my pick is it's a replacement app for me, because for the longest time I used iTeleport, and it was, man, I love that app. It was a very early on app, and it was one of the best. It was for a remote connection to your Macs. You could use the screen with the mouse. And my favorite thing about this, there were plenty of VNC apps out there at the time, but this thing was very polished. It had this thing that I would call touchpad mode, or I guess that would be the best way to say that. So it's instead of trackpad mode, I would call it. So instead of having to exactly tap on every single thing. So if you were trying to close a window on your Mac, for example, you would have to, you know, zoom in and make sure you exactly hit the little close button. With trackpad mode, you manipulate your Mac by dragging your finger, which would move the cursor, and then you could tap to just do a click. So it worked really well. Unfortunately, iTeleport really hasn't been supported for a long time, which is kind of a bummer because I paid $20 for it. But I think I got my well use out of it. So I'm moving on now to an app called Screens VNC.
Yep.
Which is it's like what
best app.
It's like what iTeleport was back in the day. So this has all the modern features. Of course it has trackpad mode. It has a connect from everywhere feature. So you run a little client app on your Mac, and it syncs with their servers so that wherever you are, you can begin your secure VNC session on your phone or your iPad. It has multitasking support, so you can do split screen on your iPad. It has 1Password integration, which kicks ass. It has 3D touch support. It has secure connections, all
with
kinds of gestures. Yes. So many cool things. This thing, it totally rocks. It's $20, but you guys know how I feel about apps and pricing, and I think that this thing is it's worth the money you pay. I'm glad that they're offering it at a price that makes sense. So check them out. It's the iOS app. You can also get the Mac app, but this is so that you can connect. You can bring up VNC on your iOS devices.
I switched to that about a year ago, and I have not regretted it one bit.
It's awesome. And I think there are a lot of features in here that I don't even realize are there, because I just recently started using it. Clipboard syncing. Like I said, 1Password. That's just really cool. I love that there's 1Password in this thing. So check it out. It's called Screens VNC. It's by Adovia. $20. Love it. With that, you can find our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. That's the email address. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions for us, send it to that address. You can check out our sponsor, which is HelloFresh, HelloFresh.com, and use the code TIOSS35 for $35 off your first week of deliveries. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at BackbeatMedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, MattCast.com, and at MattCast on Twitter. Thank you for being here, Adam.
Sure thing.
And Jeff, Mr. Gamut, he's at the MacObserver.com, Timo Daily Observations podcast, and at Jay Gamut on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
As always, it's awesome. So we need to do this again next week.
Sure, we'll do that. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.